This free State of Belief radio podcast is brought to you by Interfaith Alliance, representing 185,000 members across the U.S., drawn from 75 different faith traditions. We're committed to protecting faith and freedom. Find out about the work we do to protect the boundaries between religion and government and unite diverse voices to challenge extremism and build common ground by visiting our website, interfaithalliance.org. Whether you care deeply about minority religious rights, school bullying, LGBT discrimination, the influence of religion on politics, or the influence of politics on religion, Interfaith Alliance is working on initiatives you'll want to support. Learn more and become a member at interfaithalliance.org. From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief Radio. I'm your host, Reverend Welton Gaddy. This week, we're broadcasting from New York City.
Imagine driving by with your kids, taking them to go see Santa, when bam, you see this.
That billboard in North Jersey is causing some Christmas controversy.
The billboard, located in North Bergen, near the entrance to the Lincoln Tunnel, reads, "You know it's a myth, this season celebrate reason."
The billboard was paid for by the organization American Atheists, and we're going to be talking about the campaign's intent as well as its likely effect with Blair Scott of that group and the Reverend Dr. James Forbes, president of the Healing of the Nations Foundation. Happy Hanukkah! The Festival of Lights began on Thursday and continues through December 9th. On the Christian calendar, Advent, a season of preparation leading up to Christmas, began last Sunday. And we're always on the lookout for ways to celebrate our diversity. And there is a sweet new children's book called Blintzes for Blitzen that caught our eye. Its co-author, Elise Okren, will join us to talk about the book and other ways that she and her husband Philip have been bridging diverse worlds of faith for over 20 years.
Stunning the halibut may seem a bit harsh to some, but it's the safest and most humane way to harvest these massive fish.
Eric, you look like Jesus. We're in good hands.
Screw the finesse. We just gotta win.
Much of former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin's appeal is connected to the particular intersection of faith and patriotism that's often referred to as American exceptionalism. It involves a romanticized frontier spirit that overlaps with the imagery of the 21st century Tea Party, and it evokes dominionism, interpreted as a New Testament command for humanity to dominate all creation. The philosophy grants its fiercely self-sufficient followers a place at the mythical Pilgrim Thanksgiving table, and it pushes the members of society that don't fit into that elementary school level cardboard cutout picture out of the room, out of the debate. Now, how does this imagery come into play in Sarah Palin's political persona? And how evident is it in her television program, Sarah Palin's Alaska? Nicole Greenfield is a freelance writer based in Brooklyn. Nicole wrote a very thoughtful essay on Palin's show back in September that appeared in Religion Dispatches. She has collaborated also with our friend Jeff Charlotte on the religious freedom website, Killing the Buddha. Nicole, thanks for joining us on State of Belief Radio.
Thanks for having me.
First of all, are you surprised by the success of Sarah Palin's Alaska?
No, I'm not. I think living in America, we've seen that the American people are well engaged by reality TV. Sarah Palin's Alaska was produced by Mark Burnett, who is responsible for other shows like Survivor and The Apprentice. So no, I don't think that her success is a surprise. I think also she invokes not only this frontier-minded exceptionalism that you talked about at the beginning, but she also goes through her daily life with her children and her family. I think it engages the American public in a lot of different ways.
Nicole, you really summed up well this American exceptionalism that resonates throughout Palin's public persona and is certainly present in her TV show. When you wrote the article for Religion Dispatches, talk a little bit about what you saw there and why you wanted to write about it.
It's not, in my mind, it's not only an American exceptionalism, but it is this Alaskan exceptionalism. Hmm. She talks about, you know, this vast, barren remoteness and being the final frontier. And in the lead up to the show, she did a series of interviews, mostly on Fox News, where she brought Greta Van Susteren up to the National Wildlife Refuge and talked about how these oil reserves are sort of our last hope for our security or prosperity. And she talks about how people don't have a sense of how big it is, and mm-hmm. this idea of seeing is believing and understanding, and you have to go there in order to understand it. The idea that we can be self-sufficient if we only use these God-given resources that Alaska has.
Nicole, what bothers me is I know that some people could listen to what you've just said and say, oh, well, she's just a strong woman, and she's proud of her country. What bothers me about this exceptionalism is that if you are convinced that this is a part of American or Alaskan exceptionalism, then you can make your own rules. You don't have to pay attention to what anybody else is doing. And that is devastating for those of us who are concerned about the separation of church and state and religious freedom, because as I understand it, and you correct me if I'm wrong, if you look at it from Palin's point of view, look, we're exceptions to every rule, and we don't need church-state separation. We'll do it our way, and it'll be right.
Exactly, and it's unfortunate that she uses this idea of being Alaskan as this. We are the frontier. We are these wild, crazy people, you know, that we don't play by the rules, and we have our own rules up here. I spoke with Ryan McLaren, who's a mm-hmm. prominent evangelical pastor and author, and he was saying, you know, Sarah Palin is living in Alaska, which was like the rest of the United States 100 years ago, and those rules just don't apply to the rest of America. So it is a little disconcerting if you take this attitude and you take this the way in which things are done and apply it to the rest of the nation and ultimately to our foreign policy and our relations with other countries.
So Nicole, you're talking with someone who disagrees with you, and they say, look, what's so bad about what you're saying? We are different. Isn't this just a kind of a ideological tempest in a teapot? What's really wrong with what Palin is saying?
Well, what I focused on in the essay was how it affects the environment and how it really bodes very poorly for environmental policy. This idea of American exceptionalism, because it sort of breeds this dominionist, mm-hmm. anthropocentric outlook in which, you know, favors humans over animals and nature, mm-hmm. and you see it run rampant in the show where she's she's got the dead bear rug on her floor, and she's talking about.
I tell you what, I don't really want to disagree with her. I saw her beating those fish.
That's true. I mean, she can be pretty tough out there, but, you know, as far as from an environmentalist standpoint, it's not very, very good. And especially when it comes to things like oil drilling, which yeah. of course affects us on a global scale.
My guest has been Nicole Greenfield, a freelance writer who's looked at the cultural and religious context for Sarah Palin's new television show. She contributes to the website Killing the Buddha, and she's written for Religion Dispatches, among other publications. Nicole, thank you for spending some time with us on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you very much.
Still ahead on this week's show, Reverend Dr. Jim Forbes of the Healing the Nations Foundation. But first, we're going to be talking to American Atheist Communication Director Blair Scott about his group's provocative new billboard campaign. I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief Radio. Welcome back to State of Belief Radio, everybody. I'm Welton Gaddy. Driving on Route 495 near the Lincoln Tunnel in New Jersey, one can't help but be taken aback by an unusual billboard. It features a manger, three wise men on camels, the star shining bright over it, and over all of that, the caption, "You know it's a myth." For years, the far right has tried to make political hay with accusations of a liberal conspiracy to wage a war on Christmas. This year, the group American Atheists, founded in 1963 by Madeline Murray O'Hare, is claimed to be doing just that. It sounds tongue-in-cheek, or is it? With us is American Atheist Communications Director Blair Scott. He's going to help us understand this whole campaign better. Blair, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
No, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Let's begin with that question about objective. What is the objective of this campaign?
The objective of the campaign is not to go after Christians, what we call the 40%ers, the people that believe in a literal creation, a literal Noachian flood, take the Bible literally. Mm-hmm. Those guys aren't our target audience. Our target audience is what Barna Research, which is a Christian-based research group based out of San Diego, calls the 7%ers. Mm-hmm. And we think that number is much higher. But the 7%ers are people that go to church but are atheists. And they go because they're just living the facade. They're keeping up the show for their family and friends, or they're going for the social aspect. Mm-hmm. They, as the billboard says, know it's a myth. Mm-hmm. But they continue to go to church. They continue to tithe 10% of their money to organizations that often work against their best interest. Mm-hmm. And we understand, as a side effect of that, we're going to offend some Christians, some mm-hmm. regular everyday Christians. We understand that, and that's the risk we were willing to take. Because like you alluded to, it is kind of tongue-in-cheek. You know, there was an old saying in the West, the Old West, that if you're going to be hung for being a horse thief, you might as well steal a horse. Right? I mean, for years, we've been accused of waging a war on Christmas when we never even lifted a finger, much less fired any kind of weapon, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So we decided this year, you know what? Let's let them see what a war on Christmas actually looks like.
Yeah. Well, Blair, is this just one billboard, or are there billboards in other places as well? How does that work?
This is the first billboard that we've put up. We are considering others. We haven't made that decision yet. I mean, other atheist billboards and other free thought and skeptic billboards have gone up throughout the United States. And that was another thing that led us to this is, I mean, across the United States, you have hundreds of thousands of Christian billboards advertising for churches. You drive up the I-55 and, in Missouri heading towards St. Louis, and there's billboard after billboard after billboard showing bloody fetuses.
Uh-huh.
And nobody says anything about those.
Mm-hmm.
But we put up one billboard, and pardon the expression, all hell breaks loose, right?
Uh-huh.
But we realized earlier that these other billboards that have been put up by other organizations, they were very benign. They were just advertisements to our fellow atheists. You know, if you don't believe in God, you're not alone. There's an organization out there for you. Or just mm-hmm. go to this webpage. Well, those were vandalized. People promoted boycotts against the advertising companies that put those billboards up. And so we realized it didn't matter what our message was. No matter what we say, people are going to be offended by just our very presence mm-hmm. oftentimes.
Yeah.
You know, we're still advertising to our fellow atheists, but it's got a little more meat to it.
how do you want them to react? They see that, and is it that you're wanting them to say, you know, they're right, I don't believe all that, and maybe it's just time for me to be honest about it?
Yeah, that's essentially what we want. I mean, look, we can't force people out of the closet, and we have no intention of doing that. We just want people to think about it a little harder. We outnumber the Jewish population in the United States. We outnumber the Methodists, the Muslims combined. But the problem is we have no political power. We have no say in the course of America because so many of us are in a closet. And the fact that we're in the closet speaks volumes not about atheism, but about religion and the fear that those people have about the religious repercussions they'll face when they come out of the closet.
Mm-hmm.
If every atheist in the United States were to come out of the closet tomorrow, the political landscape would change overnight.
And what would it be, Blair? I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm saying that, well, may be true, but what would that new landscape look like?
I think you would see the stopping of, like, inserting creationism in public schools. You would have more people fighting that. You would see a better separation of church and state, you know, which protects everybody. I mean, separation of church and state doesn't just protect me. It protects the Baptist, the Methodist, the Mormon, the Hindu, the Buddhist. It protects all of us because it keeps the government out of our religions.
Right.
Look at how much politicians pander to religion.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pandering to a small evangelical minority. I mean, here in Alabama, where I live, every candidate, Democrat, Libertarian, Republican, it didn't matter. All their commercials were mostly about faith and religion because they knew that's what they had to do to win.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have to do that to win. There's 20% of us out there that don't believe in that.
Yeah.
And we outnumber the 10% of the vocal evangelicals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, how come nobody's pandering to us? Because we're not out of the closet. That's why they're not pandering to us.
Yeah. And you know what's ironic about what you're saying? Is that if you were doing this interview with me, and I am a Christian minister, I would be giving, in the last part of the conversation, most of the same answers you're giving. Because,
right.
as you well know, many Americans don't know that the great supporters that pushed through religious freedom in our country came from a very odd coalition of atheists and agnostics and Baptists and Jews and Unitarians.
Correct.
Well, what kind of response are you getting?
Yeah, clearly, we're getting a lot of hate mail from some of the Christians out there. That was expected. We knew that was going to happen. Some of it's funny. Some of it's serious. Some of it we've had to look at and seriously consider whether we want to forward it to the proper authorities because of death threats. But from the atheist community, overwhelming support, obviously. We have a few atheist detractors. We can't be the atheist organization for everybody.
Well, listen, man, I really do thank you for joining us today and talking about this. We have a better understanding about it. Blair Scott is communications director for American Atheists, a group that's making a provocative statement during the Christmas season with its "You Know It's a Myth" billboard campaign. Blair, thanks for joining us today on State of Belief.
Thank you for having me. Have a good day.
Coming up next, we'll talk about this campaign with the Reverend Dr. James Forbes, president of the Healing the Nations Foundation, and senior minister emeritus of the Riverside Church here in New York City. This is State of Belief Radio, brought to you by Interfaith Alliance. We're coming right back, and we want you here when we arrive. This free State of Belief Radio podcast is brought to you by Interfaith Alliance, representing 185,000 members across the U.S., drawn from 75 different faith traditions. We're committed to protecting faith and freedom. Find out about the work we do to protect the boundaries between religion and government and unite diverse voices to challenge extremism and build common ground by visiting our website, interfaithalliance.org. Whether you care deeply about minority religious rights, school bullying, LGBT discrimination, the influence of religion on politics, or the influence of politics on religion, Interfaith Alliance is working on initiatives you'll want to support. Learn more and become a member at interfaithalliance.org. Welcome back, everybody. This is State of Belief Radio. I am looking forward to these next several minutes because one of my best friends and most respected friends in the world is with us again on State of Belief Radio. Reverend Dr. James Forbes is president of the Healing the Nations Foundation. He is the senior minister emeritus of the Riverside Church here in New York City. And he joins us now just after we've had a conversation with Blair Scott, who is director of communications for the American Atheists, and who talks to us about a campaign set in the context of Christmas, challenging people to be honest about whether they think this is myth or reality. And we knew no one better to give us another perspective on that than Reverend Forbes. Jim, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Good to be with you, Wilton.
I got to ask you about this campaign. The postcard billboard is the imagery of Christmas, the nativity, and then the slogan, "You know it's a myth."
I would react first by saying, here's a challenge to me. I say that I would like for everybody to tell the truth about what's in their hearts, but I really often don't really want them to if it's a truth that's counter to the one I've been trying to promote. So the first response is, does my faith really sustain an openness to see people say things in public, high visibility, that counter what I spend my time promoting?
Mm-hmm.
My answer is I get a second opinion. My first opinion is, oh, shucks, don't be putting down something that's so precious to me. Yeah. That's my first reaction. And my second reaction is, yeah, but I think the word is you shall know the truth and the truth shall set you free applies to people whose truth may not be the same as mine. Mm-hmm. And I think it sets them free to be responsible in promoting what they believe in. And it forces me to be stronger in my response. And it forces me to say, well, now that people are coming out of their closet with respect to their atheism, maybe I better get to be an evangelist and get people to come out of the closet with respect to what really being a Christian means.
I know some people would say that this kind of thing would have a negative impact on interreligious conversations or interreligious movements. I think what you've just said points to the possibility that with openness, there honestly could be a conversation in this nation we've never had before.
In fact, I think that if atheists had conversations with certain Christians, they would discover that they do not hold the same view as they articulate it by God, but that we have sensitivity to the kind of excesses in terms of religious traditions that are really belligerent and feel like they've got to protect God against disappearance. We may have some things in common.
We do some things we're not asked to do, and this is probably one that you will not be asked to do. But if the American Atheists campaign came to you and said, is there a more effective way for us to enter the conversation, to be in the marketplace of ideas, what would you say?
Well, I'd have to congratulate them for, listen, I can fight you better when I see a target that's clear. So I think already the billboard will create some conversation. Problem is, the first conversation will be a kind of angry, bitter, defensive attempt to say, we're not going to have these people messing over our God or over our tradition or over our story. That's not the conversation. I tell them, maybe what you should do is, now that you've put up your billboard, second phase should be to have some conversation with people about what you meant by putting it up, and let us understand the nature of the oppression that atheists feel themselves, and let's see how we could live in a world in which some folks say God is and others say God is not. But at the end of the day, all of us have longings for purpose, for meaning, for a sense of transcendence of some sort, for some accountability beyond ourselves.
How do you see interfaith dialogue going?
I have a sense that the controversy over the Cordoba House has flushed out of silence many people who believe that really to be a good Christian clearly requires that you not demonize Muslims. I think that the conversation is such that Muslims, Jews, and Christians are getting together to say, for those of us who take a progressive perspective on it, we need to be more vocal about how it's all of us or none of us in regards to transforming this society, that no one group is going to do it by itself. So I think there probably are more interfaith conversations today than a decade ago. And that's good news.
How did you react and how do you continue to feel about the kind of religious intolerance that surfaced during the recent political campaign? And actually, we saw candidates trying to make electoral hay out of dividing people.
As a minister, I believe that the campaign revealed that a large part of our nation is in serious post-traumatic stress disorder, that the insecurity occasioned by the economy, exposure to terrorists from beyond our shores and tyranny within. So my sense is that these people are hurting bad and that we need to find a way to address that. And the first way is not simply to talk about how mean they are, though there was a whole lot of mean-spiritedness, but to find out how do people who are going through transitions that they don't know how to handle, how do we who are people of a different faith tradition address that insecurity in them and then turn around and acknowledge that although some of the people had more volume about it, many of the folks that are a part of our congregations have the same anxieties, the same feelings, and sometimes the same level of bigotry. However, with a little bit of, shall I say, a little more sophistication in it. So I'm thinking they are revealing something very serious about our whole nation. And let me add into this, that one of the strongest ones is not just the economy, but race. Race has popped its head up again. And although everybody seems to be in denial about it, it is one of the most serious emotive, shall I call it, triggers that occasions much of the discomfort and much of the controversy and a lot of the anger that we are hearing and that we heard during the campaign.
Jim, I don't want to be presumptuous in identifying myself with you or you with me without us talking about that. But I think I know you well enough, I can say this. Both of us are committed to our Christian tradition and to the beliefs and values that go with that tradition.
Yes.
I get a lot of questions, and I bet you do too, from people who say, how can you be a Christian and be involved in interreligious work? How can Jim Forbes be a Christian and not go ballistic in talking to the atheist that you had on this show? I mean, Dr. Forbes was reasonable. How do you do that as a Christian?
The first thing I say is that I believe that God does not have an ego problem. Now, there are some folks who act like God gets real upset when folks don't say the right thing. Well, of course, I think that God gets much more upset when people don't do the right thing. But I have some sense that the love that I find in Jesus leads me to have greater openness to those who are different. And this comes from his relationship to the Syrophoenician woman who he at first articulated the bigotry of separation, but nevertheless finally gave that blessing. About the Samaritans, he's constantly, every chance he gets, trying to say these foreigners that we detest are actually persons through whom the grace of God is at work. So my answer to you is, how can I really be a good Christian and find myself denying a sense of respect to God's other children? And being a Christian does not mean that we who are Christians are the only children God's got. God's got some siblings that we don't know about, but they're part of the family. My sense is God claims us all. And anyone who thinks only we who believe this, that, or the other are God's children, I would say that might be an embarrassment. Now, God doesn't have an ego problem, but I do think God could get embarrassed with our narrowness and our intolerance, that kind of thing.
You came to a time in your career when it was, most people would say, time to sit down and write books and think and reminisce. And you found an organization called Healing the Nations. I know that it pumps in your heart. What do you want to do?
Basically, I want to have all of us understand that the God who gave us an immune system wants us healthy and whole. And I also think God wants all of us to understand that we have the power within ourselves to be instruments of health to others. So the first thing I want to do is to have everybody in the world come to understand that each of us is a leaf of healing, and that just as a leaf absorbs carbon dioxide and through the process of photosynthesis produces oxygen, so each of us absorb the gifts of life that help to nourish us, but that the byproduct of self-nourishing is the capacity to be healers of others. So wherever there is a division, wherever there is a malaise, wherever there is an epidemic, my thinking is that people of faith want to come and say, Lord, we know you want to heal this. How may we be participants in it? So that's all I want to do. And by the way, the audacity of the claim is just because I used a biblical phrase. In Ezekiel and in Revelation, it says that the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. Now, nobody's claiming that we're going to report to the United Nations that all of the wars have been solved and all of the conflict between the developing nations and the so-called industrialized nation. That's been ended. No, that's not it. But at least we can say this is our hope. And beyond that, this is our daily commitment to do what we can to heal where we can, beginning with ourselves.
Reverend Dr. James Forbes, president of Healing the Nations Foundation and senior minister emeritus of the Riverside Church in New York City, and I am glad to say a dear personal friend. Reverend Forbes, thank you so much for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you.
Still to come on this week's show, Blintzes for Blitzen. It's a new children's book celebrating the commonalities and differences of several faith traditions. We'll be right back. This is State of Belief Radio.
Happy Holidays! Happy Holidays!
Welcome back, everybody, to State of Belief Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy. In a world of diverse beliefs and celebrations, many people choose the safe and generic phrase, the politically correct phrase, some would say, Happy Holidays. That is respectful, appropriate, and it's completely in keeping with the secular foundations of our nation. But an interesting alternative exists, and what caught my attention is a new book that celebrates diversity of traditions in a really charming way. Blintzes for Blitzen. It's not a new segment on cooking. It's a children's book, co-written by Elise and Philip Ogren, and it brings Christmas and Hanukkah together to help kids understand traditions that are not necessarily their own. Elise and Philip have been working to bridge faith traditions at the holidays for 20 years. They own a company called Mixed Blessing, which produces a whole line of interfaith greeting cards. I am so happy to welcome Elise Ogren to State of Belief Radio. Elise, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me on the show.
Why don't we start, Elise, with an excerpt from Blintzes for Blitzen. Would you just read part of it to us?
The story starts with Blitzen wandering off from Santa on Christmas Eve, and this is what happens as he runs into a little deli in a small, beautiful town. "You must be getting ready for Christmas," said Blitzen. "Actually, no. We're Jewish," said Michael. At this time of year, we celebrate Hanukkah, the Festival of Lights, explained Bernie. Blitzen, why don't you come join our celebration, said Deborah. Blitzen eagerly followed the others upstairs. Deborah cleared a place for Blitzen at the table. Everyone gathered around the golden menorah. Bernie lit the menorah and sang the holiday prayer. On Hanukkah, we light a candle every night for 8 days, explained Michael. And do you celebrate with Blintzes for 8 days? Asked Blitzen, licking his reindeer chops. Sure, laughed Deborah. But it's more than that. On Hanukkah, we celebrate our religious freedom. We also remember a miracle that happened many years ago when the candles on the menorah stayed lit for 8 days, even though there was only oil for 1 day. We celebrate by singing songs, giving gifts, and eating great-tasting food. Oh, said Blitzen, that sounds a lot like our Christmas celebration. And the story goes on to explain Christmas and how they can both share the holidays together.
My goodness, I like that. What made you and your husband, Philip, decide to write that book?
Like you mentioned, we had been working and servicing interfaith couples with greeting cards and products for many years. We had just gotten such an overwhelming response from them, just a feeling of being appreciated, being able to express who they are in the cards, and just getting great response from the people they sent the cards to. And we thought that it would be a good bridge to also, to have kids understand that there is other holidays during this time of year and other celebrations happening, and that we could all share in both holidays, Christmas and Hanukkah, during this time, and enjoy and respect each other.
What age group do you target in that book?
Elementary school. Mm-hmm. That particular group, they're open to every holiday and willing to look into what other religions are doing and be exposed to it at that uh-huh. point.
I'm just wondering, has anybody said to you, you are trying to convert a Christian reindeer to Judaism?
We haven't gotten that response at all. We have, in the beginning, when we first came out with our card designs, we did have some religious groups that were really not happy with us. They felt like we were trying to blend the holidays as opposed to what we try to do, which is honor the diversity of different people.
My guest has been Elise Okrand, who, along with her husband, Philip, has co-authored a new book, a children's book called Blintzes for Blitzen. You can find out more about this book and about the work of the whole organization at mixedblessing.com. Elise, thank you for joining us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much. I really appreciated it.
My goodness, look at the clock. That's all the time we have for this week's show. Visit us online, though, at stateofbelief.com. You can find out more about the show. You can listen to our archives. You can sign up for our podcast. Tell us what you like about the program. We really want to know that. We'd like to hear from you about programs you would enjoy, programs you have enjoyed. Contact information is available at stateofbelief.com. And please tell a friend about our show. We don't ask you that in a perfunctory way. We really want to spread the word about State of Belief Radio. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. There's not been a time in recent history when the cause of religious liberty needed more support than right now. Join us today. Become a member. Go to interfaithalliance.org to learn more. We'll be right back here on State of Belief Radio next week with more stories from the intersection of religion and politics, more surprises like a children's book, and who knows what else. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man.